Since 1981, Unbound has connected people like you with families worldwide on their self-directed paths out of poverty. A brighter future is possible for these families when we all walk together. Sponsor a child today, and you'll help a family take the first steps on their path. Change their future in just one click. Start walking with your new friend today at unbound.org/walk.
Hi, Katie.
Howdy.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Please Bless This Podcast. This is the podcast where two sisters talk about all things Mormon and pop culture, and sometimes...
Every time.
I know. Always a boss. Let's prepare. I mean, we gotta prepare for this moment. I don't know what comes over me. Sometimes we return to the holy grail of Mormon pop culture, which is The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. I feel like it's been a minute since we talked about them, in part because the last season was virtually unwatchable. Mm-hmm. And because you hate this show.
I do hate it, and I don't watch it. But yeah. I'm happy to talk about it.
Yeah. I feel like getting through this episode for this podcast took you like a full day.
A full day. And that's not an exaggeration. And yeah, it was partially because I was busy with like a teething baby and, sure, you know, living my life, but also because like I just had to put it down periodically. Mm-hmm. I was like, and goodbye.
It's heavy. It's dark at times.
Yeah.
I have to say though, this season, so we're on season 4 now, if you can believe it. This season is giving. I am really enjoying myself. Last season, I was struggling. I didn't know if I would make it. But this season, they've got the magic back. And they are also like really leaning back into these Mormon storylines. So we can't ignore it. We have to talk about it. We've made tiny little mentions here and there of the season in some recent episodes. We talked about it in the episode about Mormon temple garments because Heather Gay talks about her experience with temple garments and going on a mission. But the big Mormon storyline of season 4, and we're focusing in this episode on episode 8, is that Jack Barlow, Lisa Barlow's son, is going on a mission. He's going to be a Mormon missionary. Surprising.
For sure. Yeah. I am still waiting for the curtain to drop and they're not actually Mormon. Like, it just doesn't compute with me that Lisa Barlow is actually Mormon.
Yes. She is not giving Mormonness, even in her performance of Mormonness. But I will say, seeing her husband John in this episode, I was like, aha, there's the Mormon husband. Totally. That I wasn't sure he was.
Yeah.
But we're getting ahead of ourselves. So the big twist of Jack Barlow, Lisa Barlow's son, going on a mission is he kept it from his parents for a year. And on this most recent episode, he opens his mission call. So we need to talk about this because I have lots of friends who watch this show who aren't super familiar with Mormon culture. We need to help people understand how actually wild it is that he kept this from his parents for a year.
I mean, he must be, and I get this impression just from watching that one episode, I don't think he is speaking to his mother.
Yeah. He is barely tolerating her when they are filming for a television show. Like,
correct.
He can barely like perform a basic level of like civility.
Yes.
He wants to be done.
So yeah, him not having a lot to say to her in general isn't a surprise. But yeah, to keep a mission, not a mission call, but the fact that you are going to be receiving a mission call soon from your parents is crazy.
For a year. Here's the thing. To get a mission call, you have to do so much stuff. And this is, you know, my experience was a good while ago. So maybe things have shifted a little, but there's no way they've shifted so much that you could hide it from your parents when you are a high school kid for a year. Okay, so some of the things you have to do. Some like bishops would require you to take a mission prep class.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like a full-blown class you're taking. Maybe you're doing it in, like, depending on the situation, there may be like a Sunday school class that is specific to mission prep. But to be going to that consistently without your parents knowing, they're not going to church at all.
No.
Mm-mm. Or they are bonkers checked out when they're there. Yeah.
Right. So that's one thing. So obviously his bishop must know. His bishop is facilitating all of this.
Yes.
So his bishop is either keeping it a secret with him, which seems unlikely. I feel like any bishop that I've ever known would say, we need to figure out what's going on with
your parents. Yeah, let's talk to your parents.
Yeah. So maybe then his bishop isn't seeing his parents. Exactly. And so it doesn't matter.
That is the only way it makes sense. So we see his bishop in this episode. The bishop is at the mission call party. They have his name up there. And Jack's like, I mean, you've helped me through this whole thing. And the bishop's like, yeah, of course, man. So happy for you. Has the bishop met Lisa before? Because how has it never come up? Like, if he says to the bishop, I don't want to tell my parents, that's a red flag.
Yeah.
To the bishop to be like, I need to talk to those parents because they're maybe on their way out of the church. They're maybe going to stop paying their tithing. They're maybe, like, if the son feels like he can't tell them, I got to intervene. Right. So he dropped the ball there, if that's what happened.
Right.
Or he just, like, doesn't really even know them. Because your bishop, the bishop knows every family in the ward.
Totally.
And especially if you're like coming to church, paying your tithing, prepared to go to the temple, like supposedly John Barlow is. He knows him. And you're telling me they never passed in the hall and he said, hey, Jack's mission papers are coming along. Or, hey, we're excited Jack's getting ready to go on a mission. It never came up in a year.
Yeah, because it's such a big deal. Like, it's coming up. Word is getting around and people are starting to bring it up. He's coming to that age where all the young men are preparing for missions. Like,
yes,
it would be coming up. So it's highly suspicious to me. I did want to say one thing about the bishop, though. Maybe I'm just, I don't know, weirdo Orthodox Mormon, or maybe it was just the 90s, early 2000s, but a little bit interesting to see a totally casual street clothes dressed bishop at a mission call party.
Agreed.
Also, mission call parties are weird.
Yeah, we are going to get into that for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, the bishop shows up in his street clothes. I can't say that was happening when we were growing up. If the bishop was coming to your house for any even tangentially church-related thing, he was in a suit and tie. I'm pretty sure that's like the protocol. As the representative of the Lord for the ward or whatever, you are decked out.
Right. If he's coming to a birthday party or to like help with yard work or something, that's one thing. But mission call party.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting.
I thought so too. Also, this means that Lisa and John don't know Jack's friends. They don't know Jack's friends' parents in the ward. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, what's going on?
Yeah.
They have no idea.
My guess is that he is going to church with his friends. And that his little group of friends are all Mormon and he just keeps going.
Absolutely. And to be clear, like, there are plenty of scenarios where I could understand if a kid was like, I want to go on a mission. I don't want to tell my parents. My parents don't know.
Yeah.
This is not one of them because Lisa and John Barlow insist that they are active Mormons, active believing, participating Mormons. They are going to church. They're all in. So what's going on?
Right. But this, to me, it's just the nail in the coffin. Like, you're not going to church with your kid. There's no way.
The other element of this is, like, back in the day, kids went on missions 19 or older, and now they go at 18. So he's been like a high school senior planning this. Part of your mission preparation involves doctor's appointments. You have to have a doctor or doctors fill out these mission forms. I assume he's on his parents' health insurance. Mm-hmm. I assume. I mean, he's a minor.
Yeah.
They don't know. They don't know he's going to the doctor.
Yeah.
To have these forms filled out. Like, I literally, it's so strange.
In the interviews, like between scenes of them at the party, Lisa is wearing like a down to the belly button open V top.
Right.
And she's just like, my son's mission call. Yeah. Boobs out.
Yeah. And, you know, God bless.
Yeah.
Wear whatever you want. But don't be surprised when we're all a little puzzled that you're like, I couldn't be more Mormon if I tried.
Right.
While, flashing your tits.
And maybe this is the whole point. Like, maybe she's just that smart.
Yeah.
Where she's like, I'm going to bring in some views. People are going to be confused and pissed off at me. And like, let's go. I'm willing to be that person.
Yeah. I mean, she is definitely smart. She has built some kind of magnetic little brand here. And I can't figure it out. You know, I'm on the edge of my seat wondering what's going on. So it's working. Yeah. We also need to talk about just the culture around opening a mission call, but also like mission farewells and homecomings.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is a serious rite of passage for a Mormon youth.
For sure. I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but when we were coming up in the church in our era, such things like the mission call party or the farewell or whatever were like kind of looked down upon in a way, because it was it was kind of like you're just sort of performing your duty, or
you don't deserve to be celebrated like that.
Right. And it's putting the attention where it doesn't need to be, and
just 100%
go all along.
That totally happened. In fact, there was either like a conference talk or some kind of like letter that was sent out to bishops right around the time I was getting ready to go on a mission that said we shouldn't do mission farewells anymore. So it used to be the mission farewells were like, you on a Sunday in your ward before you left on your mission, you'd give a talk, but like everybody you knew would come.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd all leave early to like go have a little party. You'd have like lunch, and it was this like big event where you as the future missionary were really being celebrated. And the church was like, we got to stop that. That's not what this is about. Like, these kids need to be humbled, basically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that like came out around the time I was getting ready to leave. And I was a good little rule follower. So were mom and dad. So we were like, okay, we're not doing that. And this is where it gets interesting. So when you go on a mission, you're paying your way. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I believe the church was asking like $400 or $450 a month that goes into this like collective pot. And then the church pays your like rent and stuff. And you get like, I don't know, I feel like we got like $150 a month for food and supplies. Insane. I mean, it was crazy. We were
crazy.
Poor. We knew that that was going to be a monthly expense. I hadn't been saving up to go on a mission. So mom and dad were going to pay it. There was this woman in our ward growing up. She was one of my young women leaders. We weren't close, but she was a young women leader of mine and a single sister. And she had gone on a mission, and the church had paid her way somehow for some reason. And so and they had done it under the stipulation, like, one day you pay it forward.
Hmm.
So she told me, she's like, I've been planning to pay it forward and like pay someone else's way on a mission. And I think it'd be great to pay for your mission. And yeah. Me and mom and dad were like, whoa, that's super generous. And like, yeah, we'll take it, you know? And the idea was that I would then do that one day, which whatever, whatever. I was young. I wasn't thinking that far ahead. So she like made that offer and commitment to us. I didn't have a big mission farewell party because I wasn't supposed to. I just like gave a talk in church before I left. That was just like a regular talk.
Mm-hmm.
And then she found out that she hadn't been invited to that talk,
mm-hmm.
which wasn't a thing. Like no one was invited. The church had just said, don't invite people.
Right.
And so she rescinded the offer.
What?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Like weeks before I left on my mission.
Whoa. What a
I don't
psycho.
Know even if she like officially rescinded it, but she just like ghosted and she like didn't do it.
Whoa.
I've never seen or spoken to this woman again.
Yikes.
And honestly, fine. Like it would have sure. been kind of weird to have her pay for my mission because yeah, we weren't that close or whatever, but to like offer and insist on it and then take it back for such a petty reason.
That's so strange. Was she obsessed with you?
I don't know. I don't know, Katie. It was weird. And like she worked at Costco and mom and dad would see her at Costco for like years after that. And they were always like, oh, she hates us. Like they would kind of duck so that they wouldn't have to like have run-ins with her. Yeah. For probably a decade that was going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
She rescinded. Because I followed the rules.
How dare you?
I know. Listen, this is a thing that's coming up for me a lot in my experiences lately and in my pop culture engagement with Mormonism. People love to talk about how nice Mormons are.
Ugh.
What we're not talking about enough is how petty they actually are.
Oh, yeah.
And like defensive and egotistical and kind of the worst.
Kind of nasty.
Yes. And it's like extra insidious because of this like nice facade. Like, let me pay for your mission, but if you take one step that I don't like.
Yeah. Honestly, it's a good thing that she rescinded because like who knows what else would have come up.
Yeah, yeah,
she
yeah.
would have expected you to.
Yeah, who what knows? Would have been expected when I got back? Like, what would I owe her?
Right.
Yeah. No, it was for the best.
Mm-hmm.
But very jarring. Like, I'm this like kid who's trying to be good and go on a mission. And I'm like, whoa, I've really offended this person. Mom and dad were clearly like mortified.
If I were your parent, I would have taken it to the streets.
Yeah.
I would have been like, what's going on?
Yeah.
I would have been knocking on her door.
Yeah. Where's our check?
Right. Sweetheart? What's the issue? Oh, you didn't get invited to her talk? There was no farewell talk. It didn't happen.
So. No one got invited because the brethren said to stop inviting people. Are you above that? Are you above Gordon B. Hinckley?
Didn't think so.
I know. But this is how crazy like Mormon cultural like waves are. It's like, because clearly now it's like party it up. Like Jack Barlow even says they email you the weekend before you're going to get your mission call in the mail. So you know what's coming.
Yeah.
So like you can plan the party.
Right.
And I was like,
that's
wow.
So different.
The pendulum has swung and now it's like, party it up, man.
I know. I think about like what mission calls used to be like, you know, it used to just be this very private, personal thing. In my experience, like people that I know, like maybe it's just regional or something, but I feel like the people that we kind of came up with, and from what I remember, it was like they like just sit down with their family you know, oh, finally, we're all together. I can finally open it. And they open it and then they cry and they call grandma and grandpa. And they, you know, and that's all.
What
it's
we
not
did.
Like 50 little Justin Bieber kids with the crazy frosted tips sitting on a couch. Oh, yeah.
Here's the element of it, too, in the show that keeps coming up. Heather Gay has been on a mission, has left the church, has written a book called Bad Mormon, and finds out that Jack's getting ready to go on a mission and is like, Lisa, how do you feel about this? You know, she sees clearly that Lisa is pretending to be a kind of Mormon that she actually isn't. And Jack is about to go out to like boot camp, Mormon boot camp. And he is going to be freaking just ripped to shreds by it. And she's like, oh, how do you feel about this? You know, she's trying to have like a real conversation about it. And Lisa like won't talk to her about it. Doesn't want her to know, is like offended by her level of interest, thinks she wants to like talk trash about her son. And it's like, Heather's concern to me makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Like every time I find out a kid that I know or care about is going on a mission, I am heartsick.
Yes.
I am terrified.
You know what's about to unfold.
I'm like, this is going to be brutal. Mm-hmm. Best case scenario, you come out like so brainwashed that you don't even know. What trauma you've experienced.
Right.
Worst case scenario, you're never going to get over it.
No matter what, you're going to be so changed. I, as a mom, like, can't even imagine sending my child, my 18-year-old child, away for 2 years. I don't know if people understand. There's very little contact.
Yeah, there's more than there used to be, is my understanding. But when I went on my mission, we could talk to our families twice a year. There were two calls home. One was on Mother's Day. One was on Christmas. We were told those calls could not be longer, I want to say, than an hour. But honestly, I think it was shorter. So we could talk to our families for 2 hours a year. The only other opportunity for contact we had was one day a week we could email home, but that was also supposed to be very limited. And that was your only day to contact anyone. So friends, family, anyone. And you had like a very limited time to do it.
Yeah.
You are cut off. I mean, this is a very specific little tangent, but our grandpa passed away when I was on my mission. I found out in a public library on a computer almost a week later.
That's crazy.
Like, that's the level of cutoff I was.
Yeah, that's just not right. That would, you know, I just can't imagine being okay with that as a parent. It blows my mind.
And that was, you know, I was like 21. These kids are 18.
I know.
They're leaving home for the first time.
Let's be honest. They're useless to the world.
Yeah.
They're useless to the world at that point. They are at the beginning of figuring out what they could possibly bring to the table. Mm-hmm. And instead of nurturing that, and getting to know their new adult self, it's see you later, cut you off from everything in the whole world. There's no music, no nothing, blah blah blah, no school, no parents.
You can't read books, you can't read the news, you are cut off.
Right. It's like, let's rewire this child's brain while we still have a chance, and then they can start being a person.
Yep. And then you're sent home and told, get married immediately. And they don't even hide that the reason is so you don't leave.
Yeah.
You need to get married as fast as you can so you'll stay in the church. You need to have kids as fast as you can so you'll stay in the church, because Satan's going to try to pull you away.
Mm-hmm. Right.
it's just this continuation of like pushing you deeper and deeper in. So it's going to be way harder to get out.
Yeah. It's a totally nuts thing to do. Like I would love to see the stats on like, especially young men, because like with young men, it's like you have to go basically with mm-hmm. young women. It's a little bit more like, nobody's going to be that bad if you don't go.
Sure.
But like with young men, it's like men who go versus men who don't go on missions, like their membership status 10 years later. I mean,
mm-hmm.
if you're able to squeak by without going on your mission, I feel like 99% of the time you're home free. You're like, you know what? Yeah. I'm out of here.
Our brother joined the military to get going on a mission. Like, honestly. Yeah. Like, yeah. Without telling yeah. our parents, just one day was like, I'm going to do this because I literally can't fathom the thought of going on a mission, but I don't know how to get out of it any other way. And yeah, I think he would agree with that version of the story. Like, that is actually what happened.
I know. I've never talked to him about it, but yeah, it was like, I literally, not only can I not do what's expected of me, but I can't even begin to unpack it and talk about it. Mm-hmm. So, like, see you later.
I have to make it like legally impossible.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I have to like sign my life away so that I can't. That's the level of pressure these guys are under. Yeah.
That's interesting too, because it reminds me of me when I was that age and how I got married to get out.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a similar thing where, I mean, I wanted to live with my boyfriend and we had been together a long time by the time we were 20. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not an abnormal thing to do to move in with your longtime boyfriend when you're in your 20s. Right. But for me, it wasn't an option unless I wanted to, like, really create trouble for myself.
Yeah, blow up your relationship with your parents.
Right. So it was like, well, let's just get married. We don't have to talk about it.
Again,
sure, the bishop can marry us
legally. We need to have a legal intervention to get out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. The extreme reactions
mm-hmm.
just show how much pressure there was. One other element of this that has come up with friends of mine who watch this show, when John Barlow says to Jack, you can just come home if you want to. One thing I've talked about with them is, no, you can't. You can't just right, go. No. It's not that easy. Mm-mm. Like, I can't remember if I've talked about this much on the podcast or more on our TikTok, but I had a mission companion who begged every day to come home. Mm-hmm. And our mission president was like, it'll ruin your life. I'm not going to do that to you. Would kind of talk her back in. And the next day, she would be back on the phone in tears, like, please, please, please send me home. Mm-hmm. I knew I had a mission companion who every day was like coming up with a new ailment. My back hurts, my foot hurt, my teeth hurt, my eyes hurt, like what can I do to get out?
So sad.
I knew two sisters who had like physical altercations, like one had like clocked the other one. Neither were sent home, though they were begging to be sent home.
Oh my gosh.
They were just redistributed. I mean, people were begging to go home. And the only times I saw anyone actually make it out was because they confessed to some kind of major sin that they had committed before they came out that they had kept hidden.
Mm-hmm.
So like, oh, actually I was having sex with my girlfriend for like a year and I didn't tell anybody. So can I go home, please?
Wow.
Like, I feel so guilty now. Can I get out of here? And they would.
Yeah, you have to really be willing to blow everything up.
Yeah, you have to.
Yeah.
Or like, I'm having sex with a member here.
Right.
Because, mm-hmm. and I'm just trying to self-sabotage this so I can get out of here. Was what was really going on.
Which, not for this episode, but some of my best missionary stories are about missionaries I knew who were sleeping with members.
Mm-hmm. Yep. More common than you might think.
Sure is.
Underage.
Underage members.
Yes. 100%. Anyway. And then there were the kids who were like, my mental health is so far gone that I won't survive much longer. And I don't know what it would take to convince them that, that was the case, because I saw a lot of people with poor mental health begging to go who couldn't get, find a way out. But there was a threshold where they would finally let you go.
Yeah.
And that was it. Those were the only people I saw leave.
That's crazy. And it's crazy that you saw so many people trying to leave.
So many people.
That, like, alone.
More than half of my companions were like, I gotta get out of here. I hate this. I'm miserable.
Oh my God.
And I was like, yeah, me too. But, you know, that's what being a Mormon is.
Yeah. It's crazy. You were like paying to be trafficked for labor.
Right. Anyway, that's what Jack Barlow's up to. And God bless him. Like, no shade to him. He's a kid.
No. Yeah.
I feel nothing but like concern and hope for Jack Barlow.
Yeah.
But I do think Lisa's like insistence on pretending that things are different than they really are is irresponsible.
Amen. Yeah, hopefully his like position in the world and his being on TV and whatnot, maybe he'll get a lot of care packages.
Yeah.
And maybe he'll be the most popular person in Colombia.
Sure. One other quick theme we want to touch on from this episode. There's a lot of discussion about all these women's Mormon moms. And it just reminded me again of this idea that like all Mormons are so nice and all Mormon women are so sweet and so loving and nurturing. But we have like all these examples of these Mormon moms being neglectful, irresponsible, like cruel. Honestly, including Lisa in being so out of touch with her own son. But like Heather Gay talks about how her mom kind of drifted away after Heather got divorced. Like she couldn't support her through that. Just that disappointment, that like failure. I'm making air quotes saying that she like couldn't see past it, which is heartbreaking.
That's terrible.
Whitney talks about how her mom didn't speak to her for 13 years after Whitney left the church. Heartbreaking. And then there's Monica, who's the newest cast member of the show, whose mom Linda is an absolute villain. It seems that her story was she was like very traumatized as a child, found Mormonism as this way to like rebel / be a part of a community to help ease her trauma. But while being this Mormon and like, you know, performing a certain kind of goodness and piety, was abandoning her child and like leaving Monica in a trunk while she made out with a guy. I don't know what to say about all of this. I just thought it was like an interesting theme emerging in the episode. And I feel like my takeaway was like, religion doesn't automatically make you good.
No, and even just like the appearance of being good doesn't mean anything.
Yes.
Like anything. Like I feel like so many of this type of person, type of mom, type of like woman in the church who's like so sweet, it's always, oh, it's the nicest person you've ever met, she's an angel and she's so thoughtful, and I think that a lot of times these people are, I mean, they put the church above everything. They're willing to overlook things like the potential for like danger and trauma in a mission because they just feel like they have to. I just don't know as a mom how you could put the blinders up like that to potential dangers to your child or to your family or to your friends or whatever, but they just go through life with blinders on because they have to, or they have to, you know, in air quotes.
And it
creates, you know, what is an army of really nice, sweet people, but not really like
self-aware people.
Connected. Yeah. Right. They're not self-aware. They're not connected to their children in a way that they could be if they prioritized them, you know?
Yeah.
Over this institution.
It's so true. There's like a sort of selfishness inherent mm-hmm. in like putting your belief and your need to be like seen as obedient yes. above anything else. And I'm not right. here to say that like mothers can't be selfish. Mothers need to be entirely selfless and sacrifice themselves for their kids. No, no, no. But I am trying to say, don't sacrifice yourself for your religion. Don't sacrifice your relationships right. for that. Like, that's not the answer. Right.
It's an uneven balance of energy. Mm-hmm. You're putting, because like we've talked about, the amount of energy it takes to be a member of the church is mm-hmm. enormous, you know? Especially if you want to be a really active member and, you know, run yeah. among the best of them, keep up with the Joneses. I mean, you're doing a lot of work. It's a lot of labor. And I think in a lot of cases, all that your kids are seeing is the go, go, go. And the, oh my gosh, I can't believe you said that. You embarrassed mm-hmm, us mm-hmm. or no, don't even think about that. And yeah. and just all these like redirections and it's at like lightning speed throughout your life as a little kid in the church. It feels like, or it felt like, you know,
mm-hmm.
At every corner, it's just this, oh, okay. Adjust, 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 adjust. It's so unnatural to be a child in that environment. And these parents have to just be like laying it down all the time. Like,
mm-hmm.
you also need to conform as well as I am in order to keep up my appearance.
Yeah.
You know,
you're an extension of them.
And then the kids are traumatized and neglected. But the parents, you know, if their kids do a good enough job, they'd look like they're just great.
Yeah. And the church certainly reinforces all of this. I mean, like just in the most recent conference, there was a talk that I saw a lot of like ex-Mormon content creators reacting to, where a general authority basically said like children leave the church, even adult children leave the church because their parents somehow dropped the ball, right? Like that is mm-hmm. messaging I saw all the time in the church and yeah. that is still being propagated. And it's so damaging yeah. because yeah, it pushes this kind of behavior even more. It's like, I have to control mm-hmm. my kids. I have to make them perfect little cookie cutter versions of kids, not actually who they are. That's not what matters. I need them to right. fit a mold or I have failed. And I was the kid in the family who tried to be the perfect Mormon robot child. And what ended up happening was I turned 23 and was like, who the hell am I? What am I doing? Why am I so miserable? Like what? Yeah, I was just lost. So
yeah.
the perfect Mormon children don't come out unscathed.
I know. I remember, you know, growing up hearing things about, oh, like about me and about other kids. There was always these little buzzwords. Oh, she's so conscientious or they're so whatever. And like, isn't that adorable how they're so concerned about where they stand and about their sin and about repentance and about all these things? Isn't that so cute and sweet?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, no, they shouldn't be thinking about anything like this no. ever for a single moment ever.
Yep.
They're six.
Yeah. You're like triggering a memory for me. I remember being a little kid and we were at a church activity and some of the little boys were playing like football, like throwing a football around. And a few of the boys, they were like 10 years old, maybe 12, took off their shirts. And our brother did it. And I remember overhearing adults say to mom, it's so great how modest he is. Like, he's just such a good boy. He's so like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As if like a 10-year-old should be thinking like, is it appropriate for me to take my shirt off to play this sport? Like the self-consciousness required at that age to even think that way, mm-hmm. and all these adults interpreting it as a show of like
right
piety, righteousness,
right?
Even as a little kid, I was like, that's weird. This is weird.
Yeah, that is so weird.
And I was like, why isn't he taking his shirt off? Like, is he okay?
Yeah,
like I was worried that something comes to my mind. Yeah, was he like shy? Did he feel embarrassed? Like, there was no curiosity about it. It was immediately assigned a moral value and like praised as righteousness. But that's not what it was.
Right. And that's like, that is exactly the thing. It's the, like, let's say two Mormon moms standing together, watching this completely normal thing unfold where like in a moment of like joy and play, a group of little boys take their shirts off and are playing football. One of them doesn't. The one mom is like, oh, I gotta say something. Mm-hmm. I gotta somehow turn this into
faith-promoting experience. Yeah.
Yes, it's such bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
It's made up.
Yeah. Yeah, our brains are powerful. We can find what we're looking to find in any scenario.
Yeah.
But if, like, our goal is to read righteousness into everything, instead of to know each other,
mm-hmm.
it like cuts off real connection over and over in all of these tiny little ways, but also in huge ways.
Mm-hmm.
I just think the older I get, the more I like see that throughout my life, from the Mormon adults I was surrounded by, this like lack of connection, this like profound lack of curiosity about who I was.
Yes.
And this instead like reading onto me of who I needed to be. And I feel like that's one of the things that's hard about leaving the church. One of the many things that's hard about leaving the church is like truly shedding that facade. And mm-hmm. and what you're left with is great and authentic and real, but like often underexplored. Mm-hmm. And it can be like really jarring to be like, I'm an adult. Who am I? Who am I actually?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm an adult. Yeah. And all these people who've known me my whole life think I am X, but I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like lonely.
Yeah.
Disappointing.
And then on top of it, all the people who are still in the church who are in your life think that you're like lost.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's their focus.
Right.
It seems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like, oh, we have this new relationship now because I left the church. And so this opens us up to more connection. It's like,
right.
No. No.
No. Just in the same way that everything you did before was read through a lens of like, how can I spin this as like a righteous performance, or how can I edge it towards righteousness? It's now like everything gets interpreted as a sign of your lostness. Like, oh, you're going through a hard time. Well, you know, the Lord would bless you for your righteousness if only you would reconsider.
Right.
Oh, you're having a great time? Well, you need to be humble. You don't want to.
We'll see.
Right. Yeah, we'll see how long it lasts. I mean, you know, you may be doing well now, but long term, eternally, I mean, it's every single thing, big and small.
Yeah.
Getting spun out.
And that's the real thing. Like, that's why it's so hard to hear. They're the nicest people ever. It's because mm-hmm. we just know from experience the amount of work that's going on up there
mm-hmm.
in order to keep up their facade and to try to build yours up to meet their idea of you.
Yeah.
And it just goes on and on. They're doing so much work.
Yeah.
Up there.
And we know what's happening because we were doing it.
Yeah.
And it was being done to us. Unspoken and spoken. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, you just know.
And then you watch Real Housewives of Salt Lake City and it's confirmed. It's like, oh yeah, these relationships are super fraught. And Mormonism is this huge foundational reason why. And mm-hmm. like, somehow I'm seeing my experience reflected back to me in a housewives show.
Yeah, I know.
Unexpectedly. Yeah. Anyway, don't sleep on the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, man. They are bringing up some stuff. They're deconstructing before our very eyes.
I'm going to be really honest, you guys. I sat down to this episode, hadn't looked at the outline. I had watched the episode, but it took me the whole day and, you know, I got a lot going on. Anyway, I sat down and was like, let's see where this goes.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah,
it went.
Thanks to you.
And
it
you.
Was all you,
Katie. Nah. That'd be silly. Bring us home, Katie. How do we end this?
I'm holding a pencil as if an object lesson is just going to occur to me in this moment. Let's see if I can do this part. Thank you guys so much for joining us this week, or today, or this time.
You're nailing
go ahead and go ahead and
I can't even say it. Feel free.
Feel free to hit us up on MSN Messenger, you know.
Circa 2004.
Right, we're available. But for real, you know, we're on Instagram, we're on TikTok. I don't really know if we're anywhere else, really.
Not really.
But we're everywhere at Please Bless Pod. And please send us emails at pleasebless pod@gmail.com. Please send us an email. Literally, let's just chat. Talk to us about anything. We're open. We'll frame a whole episode around you. and just like whatever you want us to talk about. Or at least we'll try.
Yeah.
Unless we don't want to.
We have gotten multiple requests to do episodes about Mormon romance novels after our episode about Mormon YA novels. Love that. Keep the ideas rolling in. We want them.
Yeah, we're just two gals always looking for an excuse to talk. Elisa won't stop calling me.
Oh my gosh.
This is just basically my whole day. Every day is just perpetual podcast.
I call Katie
Elisa,
and I'm like, so. Mormon moms are so mean.
And I'm like, okay, let me sit down. We appreciate you guys. Go ahead and leave us a review if you are enjoying what you're hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you aren't, then just mosey along. If you aren't enjoying what you're hearing and you're still listening, you are straight up crazy.
Yeah.
And
I'm kind of curious. Like, maybe send us an email and what's up? How you doing?
Yeah.
Are you okay? What are you looking for that you're not getting? Like, let's have a chat.
Right. Cause I feel like we're pretty consistent. Like, if you're not into this and you're listening, like, that's your own fault. Oh, YouTube is a good place for us. So go there.
Yep.
Please Bless This Podcast is on YouTube. It's a great way to take in our content. You can put us up. You can smart cast us onto your TV and watch while you are going to bed at night and just like have a little laugh and just fall asleep to our little mutterings and rantings. I think that sounds kind of sweet.
I'm dying at this like 10-minute outro you're doing, Katie.
Yeah, there's a reason why I don't do this. I'm just being conversational.
Please.
Anyway, please bless Jack Barlow.
Mm, yes, Elder Barlow.
Period. And anybody else who needs a bless? If you need a bless,
you got it.
Then go ahead and take this one. It's for you. Mm-hmm. And most of all, please bless this podcast.
Amen.
Hey, you said my line.
I know.